Imagine your cousin with whom you haven't spoken in over a decade calls while you're on a family vacation. And it's not just to make up for lost time. He's asking you to drop everything and head to China with him to help him find a kidney. Never mind that it's illegal for Westerners to receive an organ transplant in China. It really happened to writer Daniel Asa Rose, who got just such a call from his cousin Larry. He tells the often hilarious true story in a new memoir called Larry's Kidney, being the true story of how I found myself in China with my black sheep cousin and his mail-order bride, skirting the law to get him a transplant and save his life. It's published by Harper. I'm very pleased that it brings Daniel Asa Rose to our show. And since you tell the whole story in the title, is there anything else to talk about?
No, that's it. Thank you very much, Leonard.
Nice having you here. When your cousin Larry first contacted you, how long had it been since you'd spoken to him?
It had been 15 years, and it wasn't merely neutral time during those 15 years. It was active bad blood. The last time we had spoken, he had tried to rat me out to the FBI for some alleged offense. He claimed that I had inflated my income on a mortgage application for a condo, which he specifically advised me to do because he wanted the commission.
So he had been caught by the FBI in some illegal activity?
No, he voluntarily. He went to the FBI because he was mad at me because I asked for a loan back of $1,000 to fund his latest invention, which incidentally was for wooden neckties. And it makes sense. In anybody else's hands, wooden neckties might have been a hit that you can sponge the gravy stains off. But Larry is a guy who can wrest defeat from the jaws of victory time after time after time.
So, did he apologize to you?
Oh, God, no.
Where was he when he was calling?
He said, we're not going to stand on ceremony, are we, Dan? This is you know, water under the bridge. Are you going to save my life or not? And I said, well, I'm here in a ski lift with my family. He said, look, it's almost Labor Day. I know that the vacation's winding down. Are you coming or not? We want to go Sunday. And yes, it is illegal. I want to make a full, you know, just clean chest of it. But I know that you've been to China before and you know your way around. And I said, Larry, stop right there. It was 25 years ago. And I didn't have a good time there 25 years ago. In fact, I was thrown in a jail cell for 3 hours with Chinese soldiers blowing smoke rings in my face. I don't want to go back to do something illegal.
What was he telling you his condition was like?
Well, I didn't know this, but he was down from about 280 pounds to about 150. He had a bad case of diabetes. He'd lost first one, then both kidneys, and he'd been on dialysis for 2 years, which is no life.
Mm. And you didn't know about any of this?
I'd heard some rumors, but he had alienated everybody in the family. I mean, the reason he turned to me was because he'd only ratted me out to the FBI. With other people in the family, he'd done worse things. So I'd heard snips.
You were the one he was on best relations
terms, right?
With.
Yeah, what's a little FBI intervention? Yeah.
And I would assume your response would have been, well, no way.
You know, Leonard, there's nothing so clarifying as a hanging or a call on a chairlift from your flesh and blood saying, "I, which way are you going to come down, cousin? You're going to save my life or are you going to hold on to old grudges?" It wasn't confusing for very long. By the time the chairlift ride was over, I had decided I got to go.
Was Larry a candidate for a kidney in the United States?
Well, it's a sad story. The situation in the States is so bad. He was a candidate. He was on the list behind 80,000 other Americans. Mm. So his American doctors were telling him to be a good doobie and wait on the list for 7 to 10 more years before he could get a kidney.
Why is it so hard to get a kidney in this country? We can survive on one kidney. Not that I'm giving your cousin Larry my kidney.
Yeah.
But is the situation similar in other countries?
It's actually worse in this country. We're not doing well, and there are things we could do to open the floodgates for organs. Right now, it is an average of, depending on what state you're in and what sort of health you're enjoying, it is a long time to wait, and that's why citizens like Larry are forced to such extreme measures as going around the world.
And calling his cousin. And he ratted to the FBI.
He did not want to do that. I mean, he was up against it.
Did Larry tell his doctor he was going to go to China to look for a kidney?
Well, it's a funny thing. His doctor kept saying no, 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 until Larry said, listen, my mind is made up. And then his doctor came up to him and said, good for you.
Well, the story you tell suggests that you were once close to Larry.
Yes, we were cousins. I had fond memories of him as a little bow-tied boy at his bar mitzvah. I remember him standing at the bima telling the gathered family that his fondest dream was to become an international munitions dealer when he grew up. So, how can you not be fond of a little kid like that? The last time he'd stepped forth in a temple, he had a fist fight with the rabbi. So I was fond of the guy. He was one of the funniest, drollest people I'd ever met. So the idea of spending a little time with him in China, wasn't totally unappealing.
And you describe him as looking like Al Goldstein, the publisher of Screw magazine.
Yes, your friendly family pornographer.
But yeah. He wasn't a pornographer.
He was not a pornographer. No. He actually was a gentleman. He really is. That's what made him such an amazing character. That's why I wanted to spend more time with him.
He has a bit of a speech impediment.
Yes. His operation for tonsils got mangled when he was a little kid, which was another reason he touched my heart. Little bad things were always happening to little Larry. And so I wanted to kind of even the playing field and do what I could.
But didn't he also have mob ties or mob-like ties?
Yes, in the middle of the book.
And I'm not talking about the wooden ones either.
No. No, he had all kinds of black market connections, none that would lead him to a kidney in China. But he was a colorful character. My family, I have
what
to tell
you. What was
he
doing to stay alive? I mean, was it just one scheme after another?
One scheme after another, plus abetted by various ingenious lawsuits. Starting when he was 14, and he managed to spill chicken grease on his forearms working at KFC in Everett, Massachusetts. After that, he realized he could live by lawsuits. So his latest one, he's living in Pembroke Pines in a condo in Florida, but he came up to Boston on a business trip during the winter and arranged, perhaps coincidentally, to be walking under a building when an icicle fell 20 stories and landed on his head. Cost him 22 IQ points, but gained him $250,000 in a settlement.
It really did cause him to lose some
IQ. Yes, he did. He's no longer the dumbest person in Mensa, which is his claim.
Uh-huh.
He did have some brain damage, which is another reason I wanted to go, because for all the mishigas that he exhibited, I needed to take him by the hand and show him the way.
And how much did he win in that lawsuit?
$250,000,
uh-huh.
Which is the cost of a kidney transplant in this country if you can get one. But he was hoping, of course, we could get one sooner in China and we could get one cheaper.
So you decided to go. What did your wife say? I'm assuming that you were second and third guessing yourself.
Oh, dear. I'll have to admit, I'll cut to the chase. We're getting divorced.
Ah, because of this?
It really wasn't because of this. But it 2 months away, as it turned out to be, 2 months away from the wife and the kids it was taxing for all of us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't quite understand why I would go to help, of all people, Larry Feldman, this black sheep.
And many readers will have problems along those lines, too.
Well, hopefully they find him lovable, as I did. If I succeed in making Larry, this checkered character, a worthy recipient of our devotion, then, we'll go for it. And I think we do. I didn't want to paint him white. I didn't want to clear up his blemishes. He did have these underworld connections. He had put a fatwa on one of our cousins, and he was serious about it. Which I find all about during
the
course.
Sick the FBI
and you. Yeah, sick the FBI and me. But he was a decent human being. He was a gentleman. He had his own code of honor. And I really got to know the man.
So what was the plan for meeting him?
Plan?
Were you going to meet
plan?
In China?
Yeah, no plan, Leonard. We only had a few days, so we met that following Sunday in China, knowing nobody, no Chinese. I don't think my accent – ni hao, is that a pretty – it's not the greatest accent in the world.
Ni hao.
But it's not the greatest accent. So we were flying blind. Mm. And as Larry said, listen, you know as well as I do, Dan, you're a fly-by-your-pants kind of guy. But this is the only way we're going to make it happen.
Well, you were there in China after 15 years. It must have changed a lot.
It had been actually 25 years since I'd been there, yes. And I was curious to see the changes because 25 years ago, men and women scampering up the bamboo ladders, what were they building? I came to see what they'd been building. It looked like Beijing, looked like Kryptonopolis in the old Superman comics.
Because it's so modern now.
So modern.
They've knocked down all Beijing.
God. All the hutongs, almost all of them are gone, and they've got flying trains and supersonic everything. It's just a gleaming 22nd century city.
What kind of hotel were you staying in?
Well, I managed to score an assignment from a magazine, so I had a deluxe hotel suite the first week.
So they were paying for it, not your cousin Larry.
Right. I didn't want to take any of Larry's winnings, his $200,000 from his latest lawsuit. So I was put up in a deluxe hotel, and the hotels are quite deluxe in Beijing now as opposed to 25 years ago. I had a chamomile-infused pillow. I had my choice of chamomile or lavender. I chose chamomile. I got up the first morning and went across town to Larry's discount hotel, and that was pretty rudimentary.
Was Larry able to continue his dialysis in China?
Yes. When I got to his hotel room, the door was opened by a overly large woman in a fur coat who sort of bowed out of the way with a, holding a toilet brush in her hand and went back to the bathroom and resumed scrubbing the toilet. And there was Larry across the room, and he said, "I'm glad to see you. It's been 15 years, and I want to lay out all my cards and make a clean chest to you." And I said, "Well, Larry, you already did. I know it's illegal, and I'm taking my chance." He said, "No, I want to really level with you now and tell you that the second reason I came to China was to get married." And I said, "Well, okay, of all the things you could have surprised me with, that's not so terrible. When do I get to meet the bride?" And he said, "You just did."
My guest is Daniel Asa Rose, who's written a memoir called Larry's Kidney, being the true story of how I found myself in China with my black sheep cousin and his mail-order bride, skirting the law to get him a transplant and save his life. It is published by Harper. Mary and Larry had met through the internet.
Did she look anything like what she had said she was? As I'm looking at her, I'm getting the running narrative from Larry. He said, "You have to meet her. She's really wonderful. She's 5 feet one. She's 110 pounds. She has fluent command of the language. She's a university professor of architecture here in Beijing." And I'm looking at this woman who looks like a linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm going, Larry, what about truth in advertising here, doesn't that?" He said, "No, not once in our two years of email did she tip her hand. This demonstrates a native cunning that I appreciate."
Well, in his case, it probably
that's right. It takes one to know one. So he appreciated her.
So is she a professor or anything?
Oh God, no. She was a substitute high school teacher of electronics in a rural high school way the heck out towards North Korea. When people escape North Korea, they come to her village. It's not an enticing place. But he loved her, and she loved him. So who was I to put the kibosh on this?
Now, the book has a good deal of dialogue. Did you record most of your conversations, or is this just did you take extensive notes?
Oh, extensive. As you may recall from various parties we've seen each other, and I'm taking notes constantly, much to the chagrin
of everybody.
I'm
going to pop up in a book sometime if I say something interesting.
Yeah, I was taking notes constantly. And Larry, because of his brain damage or because of his raconteurial skills, tended to tell each story three or four times. So I had a chance to double-check my facts. And we spent most of our time in the backs of cabs with him telling me his life story and explaining to me why he was the way he was and how we got to this point.
Hmm. As a way of apologizing, I'm assuming.
Kind of a way of apologizing, and just two sort of star-crossed cousins getting to know each other.
Okay, so you're there to get a kidney. You have any leads?
No leads at all. And I wasn't about to wear a sandwich board in Tiananmen Square asking for a pre-loved kidney, given that I'd spent 3 hours in a jail cell before. So the first thing I did – I mean, what would you do? I had very little advance notice. So the first thing I did was start calling Western journalists, and I was hung up upon numerous times because they didn't want to become poster children for this. It was illegal. Then I started calling you have to read the book. The first 80 pages are my comical exploits to try and get a kidney. What finally happens is that I'm about to give up and leave back for the States with him and say, "Larry, just be a good doobie, as your doctor's saying. Let's get back on the list because we've left no stone unturned. There are no kidneys to be had." When I got an email from a friend at home saying that a friend of his who worked at the embassy had been in the country for a week and he'd like to talk with me, I could meet him that night at Shul.
There are Jewish expats.
Well, that's
in
what
China?
I said. I'm in Beijing. What kind of synagogue am I going to? He said, "Well, there is an expat synagogue in downtown Beijing, reported to have great chicken. Go there, meet the man, and see what he has to tell you." I turned up there that night. I decided not to invite Larry because I didn't want any fist fights with any rabbis. I showed up at the temple, and as I'm meeting these various well-placed people, I'm realizing that, though my mother did not raise me to be a boor, this was my chance. So I sort of studied the group in the middle of services, looked around for any sympathy in the audience, and found myself standing up in the middle of services with my Panama hat serving as my yarmulke and throwing myself upon the mercy of this congregation.
And did they give you any leads? I don't want to give away the whole story.
Yeah. Well, that's how it started, really. The service became over quite quickly afterwards. I mean, I was down to my last. We were up against it. We had this or nothing. And at first they were the chapter was called Chutzpah is a Jewish Word. At first they seemed very offended. Everybody made beelines for the chicken and other goodies, and I was left alone. And then they started coming up, and yes, eventually a lead came through.
Now, what is this the Jewish community in Beijing all about? Are these business people who were there?
Mostly business people, some journalists, some bankers, some diplomats who wanted to. And apparently the story touched them because they when I got back to Beijing, they directed me to – I mean they went out on a limb. I had to protect everybody's identity, but when I went out to Western China and spent 2 months in this tiny city of 10 million people.
She.
Yes, I call it she, which actually just means city in Chinese.
And you give the doctor the name Dr. X.
Dr.
To
X.
Protect.
Oh yes,
the guilty.
I was very serious about protecting everybody. They really went out of their ways. It's nothing that I did really. It was the Chinese people and my leads who were so amazing about this.
Well, since this is a very funny book, people will assume that Larry got his kidney. Is he okay now?
Yeah.
What about Mary? Is he still married?
I don't want to give that away.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to give that away. You're assuming they got married to begin with. Let's say they're in love, whether they tied the knot or not. But his kidney is functioning. You know, within 24 hours of getting his donated kidney, he was pink of cheek. He looked like the bar mitzvah boy that I knew, 40 years before.
Do you have to escape China after that because you've committed an illegal act?
Well, it's hard to say, Leonard. I was given just a very small glimpse into the inner workings of China. I had a guide who was helping me. She was a volunteer guide. And I don't want to give it away, but she turns out to be not who she claimed to be. Yeah. And she sort of greased the wheels for us, as it turns out. She was working both sides of the fence. And no, we were given the VIP treatment by the doctor. Dr. X let Larry use his limo to drive to the airport. I mean, people were so good to us. My experience of China 25 years ago had been harsh. I remember a policeman dragging a citizen down the street by his hair. 25 years later, they remind me of Americans. They're open-hearted. They're generous. I fell in love with China. It's really a love story to China.
Just don't be a dissident, of course.
Don't be a dissident. Don't be a criminal.
In a New York Times op-ed last year on organ transplants, you wrote that it's not the line jumpers of the world who deserve our indignation. It's the American system that makes us wait in line to begin with.
Amen.
So has anybody responded to that? Is the system getting any better? Is it the same as it was?
There is movement in lawyerly circles. The doctor circles were kind of indignant. They are very conservative. They like to go the old way. But
Have they responded to this book?
Yeah, doctors. They were.
How dare Larry do this and not die?
Yeah, and how dare you abet the process? They were pretty offended. But a lot of readers and a lot of people were very enthusiastic about some of the ideas about opening up the floodgates for organs, because there are just a few things we could do in this country to make it so that there would be no list.
Well, you had to start calling people to find out whether you could find a doctor. I'm assuming now you're getting calls from people from all over the country asking you, what do they do? How do they get to China and get a kidney?
I am. I have helped a few people. I advise most people not to go to China. I do tell them to look at the internet and widen their scope. Do not sit idly on a list in this country for 7 to 12 years, because that's going to get you nowhere.
Are there other places that – could they go to Sweden? Or?
I don't know about Sweden. It's changing all the time. Our other option was to go to the Philippines at the time. But while we were there, they made it a crime punishable by a $43,000 and 2 years in prison. So it's changing all the time. I wouldn't want to give specific advice, but I can talk to the American public about what we can do in this country to open the floodgates for organs.
Because there's a big concern about selling organs.
Yes. The main thing we could do is to change the presumed consent option so that people would have to actively opt out of donating rather than opting in. It's a simple thing. They've done it in Spain, and there's virtually no waiting list in Spain any longer.
So if you die and you have a good kidney, they can just take your kidney unless you've said, I don't want anybody to take my
kidney. Unless you've opted out, it's automatically assumed that you want to be a good citizen and donate your organ.
Daniel Asa Rose has won an O. Henry Prize, 2 Penn Fiction Awards, an NEA Fellowship. He has been the arts and culture editor of The Forward and currently the editor of international literary magazine The Reading Room. Is also written for The New Yorker, Esquire, GQ. And this book is called Larry's Kidney. It is published by Harper. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Leonard.